Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today is Tell Del Tuesday, and we have a wonderful guest out of New York, and his name is Hus Sharifi. Hus, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start the show out with a little bit of background on yourself. How did you get started in real estate? How old were you? And then how did you find us?
I was working in New York, actually in the financial industry, and I was happy with my job and actually was paid quite well, but I was paying a lot of taxes, and I was thinking there's something that I should do. I wasn't sure exactly what, and I started reading some books. I listened to a lot of podcasts. I listened to a lot of books, and I came across a couple of books out there, the famous One Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the other ones. And I started looking into buying some small units. Of course, New York being what it is, it's not always easy to do. So I did do a few of my own to start with. And then later on, when I started getting into it and doing some small one or two apartments, I started listening to more podcasts because I felt I wanted to learn, really have a guide on how to do this. And there are a lot of people on the YouTube and on podcasts, and they were talking about how to do real estate, but their story really never really jived with what I had seen until I found your show. And that was kind of by chance. And I started listening, and the stories that you talked about running real estate, managing real estate, how to do things, that actually really hit a chord with me because I felt this guy has done it before. And most of the people I've listened to hadn't really gotten their hands dirty. So that's how I got into it.
What size properties did you start with when there in New York when you first started doing this yourself?
In New York, it's actually, you know, it's very difficult to buy apartments because of prices. So I did a couple of two-unit studio apartments that were very expensive. Those, after a while, the cash flow was very low, and it was really difficult to make money. So I actually started going across the water in Jersey City, and I started looking at things over there, and those ones were much more affordable. When I joined Lifestyle and I learned more about how to actually look at these properties and look at the equity and look at how to build the cash flow, I continued buying in Jersey City. And those ones were like one or two units, three units, you know, duplexes, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you found Lifestyles, you came here, and were you surprised how open people were about all their finances and stuff like that? It's not really a New York kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, absolutely not. It's New York is, as you know, very cutthroat, and when it comes to something like that, there's definitely a very competitive and a little bit of a cliquey environment. People keep their secrets to themselves. The special recipe, the special sauce is never discussed. And that's, to be honest, one of the main things that attracted me to Lifestyles, in addition to the teachings. I did feel that people were open, people were sharing, people were willing for other people to succeed. And, you know, being from New York and having dealt with this environment, that was really a welcome change.
So I think I would be remiss to all of my listeners, having on someone from New York that's in real estate, to not ask the question about the Mondavi thing. I know you and I have spoken about it many times at different events, about how afraid I was to invest in the New York area. Do you believe that Mondavi will actually be able to start taking people's real estate away from them? And the way they do it is they fine you, they condemn you, then they foreclose on you as the city, and then they own it. Do you think this guy's really got the backing to do that, or is that just pipe dream?
I don't think so. I think there have been all kinds of talks. I've been in New York 26 years of my life, and I've seen various mayors come and go. And also, actually, in Jersey City, there were a few mayors who did talk about that. I think there's actually an interesting analysis on the New York budget gap of $125 billion. And they analyzed it and said that this is the New Yorkers pay more taxes than some of the European countries, almost with the there's a New York City tax, there's a New York State tax, and there's also the income tax on top of that. If you add all of that together, New Yorkers pay almost 55 to 56, 7%. And they were saying that for that, the New Yorkers actually don't get anything, because at least in Europe, when they pay that, you have free health care and free education. New Yorkers are paying that and they're not getting anything. I think what he is trying to do, he's promising something, and just do many politicians do, to get elected. But once they come in and realize the actual practicality of being able to take people's homes in New York is not something that they can push through. Number one, the state is not going to go for it, and the city is still governed by the state laws. And number two, New York has a very strong and a huge core real estate segment that drives a lot of the city's economy. If you start meddling with that machine, the whole city would suffer. I think all of this would get tempered down in the long run. And in the end, I think probably within about a year or two, things would die down. But they still have to deal with their budget deficit, which they'll probably try to do by raising property taxes. That I think they will do. But how much they will do it remains to be seen.
The mayor has the ability to raise the property taxes within the city. He doesn't have to go to the governor for that.
I think he can. He does have the ability to do that. But I think there are voices in the state that would have a say in the background on how much he's willing to do that, because New York City is the heart of the state. And if the economy of New York City starts affecting the economy of the rest of the state, I'm sure people will have things to say. And there's still funding that has to come from the state, and that's controlled by the state. So I'm not sure he's going to go down that route a lot.
All right. Well, I appreciate you filling us in on that from being a resident there. Let's go over to change over to this line of thought. Once you came here and started looking at the economics of the Midwest, maybe even the East Coast Midwest type of investing, it's tremendously different. What did you think when you saw the prices we were able to get and the cash flows we were able to get and the leverage we were able to get?
It was quite amazing, which is actually one of the reasons that later on I did actually start investing in places outside of New York. Just to give you an idea, and we're not even talking New York, but in Jersey City, where I started buying, for a small 600 square feet apartment, let's say around 700 square feet apartment complex, you will end up paying in a reasonably good location about $195,000 a door. And okay. I started looking at properties in Texas and other places, good location in Houston, where you could get, of course, a much newer property. And don't forget, you know, New York is, these buildings in New York are old. I remember when I was looking for an apartment, they'll ask me, it's like, do you want a pre-war building? And always the second question was, which war are you talking about?
That's funny. No kidding.
So, absolutely. So compared to what you have in terms of the quality of the buildings and the prices that you're getting, it was a vast difference. And in addition to that, the cash flow that you're getting in places, even I do invest in places like Atlanta as well, but also in Texas, is probably about 10 to 20%, maybe even more than what you get in places like New York. So New York is all about buying it and holding it with little appreciation, with little cash flow, but more on the appreciation. But even that's been affected because of all the policies in the last few years.
I want to ask you another one. What do you think was some of the differences when you sat in the first class, where the 2 day where we teach you everything that we think about how it works and how it should be done and so forth? What type of competing ideas were there to the stuff that you'd grown up with? You know, when you grow up in New York, there's people, everybody there, they're all the smartest people in the world. I've never met a guy from New York that wasn't the smartest guy in the world, the sharpest knife in the drawer. There's just none of them out there. So obviously all these guys have their own ideas, their belief system. What competing belief systems did you find when you came, and what did you think of them as far as being effective or not?
Right. New York is definitely a lot of smart people here, and people do real estate. And a couple of things. Number one, I think there was still a lot of emphasis on just the buying part of a property. It's how much do I pay for it? Am I getting a good price? Potentially, you know, like I said, cash flow is not a big component in New York, because most of the time you're actually buying at negative leverage. You know, you're just not have any cash flow, which means you might even buy something that's you're getting a lower return, a lower and cap rate than your interest rate. It's negative leverage, what they call it. The biggest thing that I think really put lifestyles apart and the teachings was about the way you went about renovating the property and managing it. And in New York, I'm not indicating that's always like that, but definitely the emphasis was on trying to do the renovation quickly and not to a great degree, just to whatever you can do to be able to get a tenant in there and start paying. And that's probably one of the reasons the city has been taking advantage of this fact, saying, look, you know, that some of these landlords don't take care of their apartments. I was very surprised to hear when you talked about best product, best price. And I'm like, you know, what is this guy talking about? Best product. If I'm going to, you know, make the product the best that there is, then I'm not going to be able to make money. That was the determining factor. I think what I learned in LU was the way you treat your customers and the way you build your product, the apartment that you buy, the way you renovate it, the quality to which you renovate it, the standard to which you renovate it, the uniformity of the quality made a huge difference. So you're actually hitting two birds with the same stone, with one stone, and that is you're taking care of people, you're giving people a place to live, a good place to live, and you're making money. And the emphasis in New York, from what I saw, was all about, I'm just going to see what I can do to make money. And I never thought this other way would work, but I was pleasantly surprised that it does work. And I started applying it, and actually my returns were much higher when I started applying this strategy.
Great. So now you came in, and you met all these people. Let's talk about the community of Lifestyles Unlimited. How surprising was it to you the way the people all kind of meshed together? That mean anything to you?
Yeah, it was. I'll tell you a funny story. I mean, it's actually a reality. When I first came to New York, New York is an expensive place, probably one of the most expensive places in the United States, and apartments are expensive. When I first came, my budget was $1,800. Prior to that, for 6 months, I had a place to live that was given to me by the bank I was working for. So I didn't even know what the prices were like. So after that 6 months, they said, you know, you have a budget of $1,800. And I thought, $1,800? This is amazing. I could go out and, you know, get anything. Only to realize that $1,800 would get me a studio about 600 square feet, if that. And what was interesting was I would go to New York, like I was saying earlier, people don't discuss their income as such. But when you go to a party or you go meet other people, there are two things they ask you. Where do you live and how much rent you pay? And by that, they pretty much can figure out how much you earn.
Because that is amazing. They nail you with that question. Huh?
They nail you with that. If you live on Central Park West and your rent is around $8,000, they get a pretty good idea how much you make. So in a way, everyone's income is out there, and people always answer the question, how much rent you pay. But people never discussed on how they made their money or how much return they get on their investments or anything like that. In Lifestyles, people would tell you exactly how much they made, and they're very proud to tell you, because it was the success that they had attained by going through being in lifestyles and applying it. And they were very happy to talk about it. And even better, which I was very impressed with, was to share ideas. People were happy to share what they did and how much the teaching helped them and where they bought and how long they've had it and how they fix things. To me, that was a big plus.
You know, I've joked for 35 years teaching this stuff, Huss, that most people don't tell their kids how much money they make. You realize that? Some husbands don't even tell their wives how much money they make. They don't tell them what they own as far as investments and where their money is and how much net worth they have at all. Yet we get them, people in here, and they get up and talk about that like it's no big deal.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing thing to see. Friendships, mating friendships here.
Oh, yeah. It's become a community of investors who, I think after a while now, we've become friends. Ed, who is one of the guys I know from Seattle, I still keep in touch a lot with the outside real estate market. I go to the big conferences because I'm always trying to learn. And I also try to compare and contrast what we do with LU. And I always come back and thinking, you know what? We're doing the right thing. And that's always a great thing. So I was in Vegas about a month ago for the big real estate conference. And Ed was one of the guys I've known for several years. He's one of our ambassadors. And after this, about 4 years now that I've known him, We actually realized that we've become friends, even though he's an investor and we both, you know, adhere to initially to make money. And I said, hey, Ed, what are you doing? Let's meet up and let's go to the Sphere, you know, the big thing that they built with the big screen in Vegas. So Ed and I went to see Wizard of Oz.
There you go. It's the size of the screen you watch Wizard of Oz on.
There you go.
Right.
And absolutely. And it was amazing.
Great.
And Ed is one of many that I've made friends with now.
Great. Well, it looks like we're going to have to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the apartment deals you've done and how they worked out and how you financed them and what you did with them. So a lot of information. Don't go away because it's all going to be real estate intensive when we come back. We'll be right back with Huss Sharifi and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
New to real estate investing? At Lifestyles Unlimited, you'll learn how to get started with step-by-step education and real-world strategy. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today out of New York is Huss Sharifi. And Huss, as we get back into this now, let's talk about the deals you've done since you joined Lifestyles. The first one, let's go into it. It was a 41-unit property in Jersey City, I think. Is that the first one you did?
That's correct.
Tell us about it. What did you like about it? How did you work the deal?
Sure. 41 units. This was, like I was saying earlier, it was freshly built in the year of 1954. it's an old brick building, and it actually has an elevator. Now, something like that, just because it's in New York, it's worth a lot. We paid $190,000 a door for it, and we financed it with agency debt. We got about a 70% financing on it, and we've had it for about almost 3 years, and we have raised the rents from the one bedrooms were going around between $1,400 to $1,500. We've now raised those to about $1,700, $1,800, and the one bedrooms, which are massive one bedrooms, 750 square feet, and we've raised those to $2,200 from around $1,800. we've got about a 20% increase in the property value since we bought it. And I've just had it recently appraised, and that's the value that they gave me.
It's great. Now, did you syndicate this or do this as an IRO?
No, this was a syndication with Lifestyles.
So let's talk about that. Did you find the property before you put together the group, or did you put together the group or loosely put together a group and then find a property? How'd you work that?
Well, I joined Lifestyles, and I met a lot of people in Lifestyles, and I was looking for deals. So I did have my team in terms of the attorney and the loan and all the other things that I was going to use. So I had that ready. But in terms of putting together, in terms of investment and actually getting the money, the capital to buy it, I was basically relying on Lifestyles. And I was quite amazed how quickly we were able to raise. We needed about $4 million to buy this one, to buy this property.
So how long did it take you to raise the $4 million?
On my first deal, it took, I think, about a little over a week, maybe about 2 weeks to get all the money. Of course, you know, being in New York, people were a little bit hesitant. But I think the fact that I had the strategy that I was taught in Lifestyles and some of the other IROs that I bought before and that operated in New York area, people had confidence. And I think, and we've been paying dividend. Within 6 months having bought the property, we started paying dividend.
So, yeah, I think you brought up a good point that a lot of Midwestern investors might be a little hesitant to pay that kind of price for a 70-year-old property. So I get what you're saying, but you still raised all the capital in just 2 weeks? That seems rather rapid for someone who's working from the outside in instead of from doing the stuff that we've all, you know, bread and butter stuff we do every day. So were you pleased with that?
I was very pleased with that, but things only got better later.
No, well, I guess we can't wait. So we'll move one more step into this deal first, and that is when you take a 75-year-old deal or 70, whatever it is, what do you do? What did you do to it once you bought it?
Right. So everything we're taught in Lifestyle about going in and fixing everything about the property is one of the things that I try to apply. The one thing actually about buying older buildings, especially in places like New York, is these are solid brick buildings. So in terms of structural integrity of the building, once you, of course, at the beginning, we do our due diligence. We go through everything and make sure the building is structurally sound. I had a structural engineer look at it because some of these older buildings, almost 80%, I mean, this was in Jersey City, but almost 80% of what's built in New York always sags. It's always tilting. You go to some of the apartment buildings on near Columbia University, and the test is you basically get a quarter and you roll it, and if it doesn't roll, you don't buy it because it should be rolling if it's a New York building. So that's the part about these buildings. Yeah, a lot of them are tilting. So we made sure that we didn't have those issues with this building. So the building was solid. The things that we did was these are older units. So we went in and did a complete interior renovation. We put in new floors. We put in new cabinets. We put in new closets. We changed some of the windows. We basically made it into an upgraded, high-quality apartment in that location. And by the way, the location is a fantastic location. It's right near the main part of Jersey City, 5 minutes walk from the subway. In New York, everything is about how far you are from the center. If you're close to the subway, it's like you're driving a Lamborghini. That's what it means. So that's what we did for all the units, and that's one of the reasons we're able to raise the rents. It's that quality that attracted people to the apartments.
So just out of curiosity, you know, you've been on many, many road trips with us. And by the way, we've got the one coming up at the Expo here. But there is a look to a Lifestyles unit. We all use pretty much the same flooring, same kind of counters, the same kind of appliances. Many of us use the same kind of cabinetry. On a property that's this much different in age, is it possible to get that look, or is it a different look, a New York look?
You can get some of that look. You can get the look for the flooring. You can get some of the cabinets, but you can't quite get the same setup as, for example, for the kitchen. The kitchens are small. The whole apartment is small. So I would say about 50-60% you can reproduce that. But that's good enough for this market, because actually, by contrast, if you look at what other people do in these apartments, we are head and shoulder above their renovation and the quality of the apartments. When people, tenants, walk into on our apartments and they see what we've done, they'll take it on the spot. And by the way, the competition is so high in New York, you don't take it on the spot, someone behind you will take it. But because they're so good, they don't look around as much. And but there are still some challenges because of just the space factor to do exactly the same thing.
Gotcha. The marketing that you're explaining reminds me of the two guys going hunting for bear. And the one guy's putting on hunting boots and the other guy's putting on tennis shoes. And the guy looks over to him with the boots and says, "Why are you wearing tennis shoes to go hunt bear?" And the guy goes, "Because if we miss, I want to be able to run." And the guy goes, "You can't outrun a bear." He goes, "I know, but I can outrun you in those boots." So that's your pricing model, right? Just as long as I can beat the guy next to him, okay,
absolutely.
Type of deal. Let's talk about the next one then. You seem to have, I heard a little twinkle in your voice there, that there was something exciting. Let's go ahead and move on. Tell us about the next deal.
The next deal was actually, normally in lifestyles, people start with a smaller deal. And this is a small deal for sure. But, you know, if you're in other markets like Texas, maybe a small one, the second one would be like 100 units. In my case, one of the things actually we're taught in lifestyles, which I think is, especially with everything that's happened the last few years, is of paramount importance, is the conservative approach. I know you always talk about, like, you know, not try to manage too many things at the same time if you can't handle it. So I wanted to do something small for my second deal and make sure the first one is stabilized and is paying out and everything is under control. So my second deal was 12 units. And it was still an older building, not as old as this one, but I think it was in the 60s. And we bought that for around, I think, $1.4 million. And we needed to raise... we actually raised some CapEx money. Actually, no, it was a little bit more than that. I think it was around like 1.8. We needed to raise just a little under $1 million, maybe $1.1 million. And we raised that in about 4 days.
There you go. You're getting better at it. And
well, it gets better after that.
All right. What did you do to this one?
This 12-unit one?
Yeah.
The 12-unit one, same approach. We started, you know, raising the rents. We got the same percentage. The one thing about that one was we had four people actually moved out right away. So we able, there's a 12-unit, so we were able to renovate those right away. And we got an average of about 250 rent bump on all of those.
We're now going to move our way into the third one, which is the largest of the ones he's done so far, and it's furthest away from his home. So let's talk about those differences. Huss, larger, farther away. How did those two factors play out in your, you know, your process of doing this?
Right. So the one of the things is, obviously, one of the things that we're taught in lifestyles, and I kind of started a little bit like that, was to buy something in your backyard first and learn to manage it. And in New Jersey, we have our own team. We manage the properties and everything is going well. I did have some family in Atlanta and some friends, and I had bought a few smaller properties there. So I'd actually built some experience managing that area. But the biggest thing is, when you're buying remote, you're going to be using a third-party management company. And what I found is also another difference between other places that I listened to about education on real estate, was that LU actually does teach you how to manage a multifamily property remotely and using third party, because the principles and the guidelines that are there do apply to that too. So that actually helped me about how to go about buying this deal and how to actually manage it. And the biggest thing that still resonates with me, and I think is one of the talks that you gave one time, and you said, this is not an easy thing to do. It's not for everyone. But you said you must have the will and the determination to bend the management company to your will. And that stayed with me all throughout this deal. And that's exactly what I did.
Okay. So in buying this particular deal, let's talk about how did you find something that far away from you and how long did it take you to do the deal?
Right. One of the things that happened is I slowly started getting to know the brokers in the Atlanta area. And one of the things that's very important is the reputation you have in the market. They ask you, you know, what deals have you done? You know, how are they doing? How did you raise the equity? So one of the things that comes as the being a member of LU is we're able to buy deals and close deals. And because LU operators are good operators, they saw what I've done with those other properties. So I made a lot of connections with the brokers who obviously sell these properties. That's how I was able to find it. It took me a while to find it. It took me probably a year to find something like that. And it took a lot of phone calls and seeing. And I would take trips to Atlanta, look at the properties. I'll stay there for several months to buy it. And eventually, you know, we got awarded the deal. And there were several people bidding for it, but we got it, I think, partly because of our past record.
Okay, so you've got the property locked up. What did you have to raise, and how long did it take you to raise the capital?
This one was amazing. You know, that's probably one of the joys of being in lifestyle was you have your peers who've invested with you, who speak about the performance and the quality of what you've done before. And because of our community, and I didn't even know this, people talk to each other. You know, investors call each other up. It's like, hey, have you heard about this guy? He's from New York. He bought these properties and he's paying this much. And I didn't even know that. So we put it up. We put the numbers. Of course, the deal itself made a lot of sense. I think it was we're buying it at a little over $8 million. And it had an existing loan on it at 3%. And the cap rate on it was 7%. So we had about 4% potentially of return on investment. And we put the deal up, and within the first day, we needed about, I think, a little over $4.5 million on that one, maybe around 5. Within the first day, we got 3.5. And over the next day or so, we got the rest of it. And the deal actually got oversubscribed, where people like calling me is like, is there a way I can get in maybe through the back door or something like that? I said, no, I'm afraid I can't do that. But it was really a joy. And then the emails that I received from people about what I'd done on the previous ones and how much they wanted to invest with me, I think that sets us apart. I've not seen this kind of return. Of course, you know, I did my job and I did produce a good product and good return, but genuine people who give you real comments that actually, you know, sits with me and touches me.
When did you do this last deal?
This was last year. We closed in April.
April 25?
Correct.
So that's a recent deal. That's a great thing. By the way, just so I don't forget before we get off the air here in the next minute or so, are you going to the expo?
Absolutely. I'm going to buses. To the bus stores.
Great, great. So people are going to be able to meet you there, get to know you, ask you questions, so on and so forth. All the stuff we talked about, you'll be available for?
Absolutely.
Great. There you go. Well, maybe the next time it'll only take one day. At this point, what's your future look like? I know you said you just did another deal. In general, what is your plan for the future?
I definitely want to keep. Most important thing to me is, you know, the first rule of what we've been taught is I want to keep people's principal and make sure that I return them what they put in and, of course, with the profit. So my first and foremost is continue running the properties the way I have. Every single one of our properties is paying dividend, paying between 5% to 6% on all of them. We started paying on the second and third one. We started paying within the first month. I want to continue doing that.
All right. Well, that's a very good goal. I appreciate you coming on. I look forward to having you up on stage there at the expo also. For the rest of you out there, remember this. It's not just the money. It's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.